Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Galactic History Show. I'm your host, Chris Hales, and first of all, apologies, everybody, for the rescheduling of the show somewhat earlier. I did make a note on the show page. I hope you saw it. I've had my travel plans, shall we say, tweaked the last few hours. Had to leave my location a few hours earlier, so pulled the show back an hour, and I'm hoping that those that find it, those that come at the correct time and log in halfway through do realize it and just either wait till the show's over and pull down the broadcast or listen to the end and then pull down the first half later. Been a rather amazing week for me. I've had a lot of interactions with many different people, and in fact, I wouldn't mind if someone in the chat room could just give me an indication that my actual audio is coming out. I think it is. I hope it is. You guys are staying, so that's okay. So if someone can pop that in the chat room. I'm not sure if my chat room's actually working properly because I'm on a borrowed computer at this point. In fact, I will refresh my screen at this point. And there we go. Just see if the chat room is working. I'll refresh the chat room too. Yeah, I've got the show set up on someone else's machine. And I'm going to type in, can you hear me? I just want a confirmation. Oh, in fact, that's... yes, I just did the wrong thing there. Can you hear me? Okay. There you go. If someone could respond to that, that would be great. Otherwise, I'll press on. The subject of today's show is actually a replay. It's a replay from the last day of the Return to Atlantis conference. I had intended to play... Oh, okay. Neo Amor, thank you. You can hear me. Excellent. I had intended to play a full version of the presentation that Andrew Bartzis, myself, and Hope Gill gave on the last day of the conference. Couldn't organise that for today, partially because the Return to Atlantis conference organisers are the people who benefit from the sales of the material that was put out on live stream, and they're using it to fund a return to Lemuria, and jumping the gun on releasing material publicly won't assist that. So I was planning on doing that, but I did actually consult with them. They asked me to wait until it was released publicly. One of the reasons I wanted to use that presentation, it was as particularly energetic presentation, very energetic presentation, being in that room at that time, in that building, so protected. It was a really great energy flow. Content of that presentation has galvanized myself and Hope Girl in particular, and Andrew to an extent too, because he's been helping us all along with shaping what we're actually planning on doing. That particular exercise that we're going to do, we consider to be the most useful thing we could possibly do for the people at this point in time. We both went to the conference. With an expectation that something would shift. We'd been talking about this process for several weeks. It would actually sort of came up in conversations about 2 weeks earlier, and we've been refining and developing the idea, and we got it to a stage where we were ready to talk about it. And talk about it we did. If you go to the Return to Atlantis website. Okay. Laugh out loud. Thanks, Nirmal. I'm not sure what's going on there, but you answered my question fortuitously anyway. Okay, so we weren't necessarily going to be given the opportunity to present this material. It turned out simply to be that way because Andrew felt that it was the thing that needed to come out at the conference and the thing that he could facilitate. And this particular idea that we have for advancing the whole idea of freeing the planet, he's completely behind because it actually empowers individuals at a sovereign level. And that's something that he's always talked about as being absolutely pivotal at this time to stand up and actually find ourselves, understand who we are, understand that we are the value, understand that if we stand as sovereign individuals, the system will morph. It will shift before our very eyes. The energetics are actually set up for it. They're actually ready to go. I spent the past week as guest of a couple of light workers in northern Florida, and they have been incredibly helpful in advising me on what they see energetically is going on. And from their perspective, the stage is set. We are ready to rock and roll. The planet apparently has actually been moved. I've heard this from several folks, including Julian Wells. It came up with the alignment of the grand sextiles, which happened in at the end of, I think, August and September. And during that period, although our reality appears to be the same, because we hold it so brilliantly as co-creators, everything looks the same, but it's not. It's not the same. What the energy supports is anything that stands in truth and anything that stands for the greater good. And that it's as simple as that. This is why the collective actions of those who were running this planet are failing and fumbling. You only have to look at what's going on with the American financial system. They do not know what to do. Nothing they put up there is actually working for them. They wanted to start a war in Syria. It's not working. It's just failing. And even heard one rumor, and it's only a rumor, that there was supposed to be a false flag nuclear attack on a US city, and that the military literally refused to do it, and is the pivotal reason why some generals have recently been fired. So what we're starting to see is the Three Stooges behavior that Andrew has described in some shows as to what will happen from this point forward. We're actually seeing it starting to come to fruition. So the presentation we did at the conference, if you haven't heard it yet, and I suspect many of you haven't, was about starting a crowdfunding campaign to literally kickstart abundance. There's a whole lot of aspects to it, which we go into in the course of this show, and all of them, in fact, as a totality, when you look at the sum total effect of the things we're putting forward that can be done, it amounts to actually establishing, if you like, a new civilization. It has all of the aspects that you require for self-governance in a new civilization. It has a financial aspect, has a lawful aspect, it has a sovereignty aspect. And it's actually, in every way, a transitional tool, specifically created by the people for the people, independent of any government, involvement at all other than the transaction system we require to gather the asset, which is the crowd, the actual crowdfunding. And the act of removing energy from the old system and bringing it into this crowdsourced fund is an act of pure sovereignty, pure sovereign free will. It's an I am statement. And in that, in a subtle way, anyone who donates to this fund is stepping aside from the old system and stepping into the new. And the use of the fund is intended to do those things that are required to turn up the volume from the alternative media and to bring forth some technologies which will break through the mainstream media blockade that has been inflicted for a very, very long time on those technologies. Now, the show that it's on, if you're not familiar with it, is called The Repurposing Show. I mentioned this on the Galactic History Show. It's a show specifically about how we transition, about how we take what we've currently got and repurpose it for the new paradigm. The participants are myself, Hope Girl, Scott Bartle and Rena Iliades. Now, if you haven't heard of Scott Bartle and Rena Iliades, they are both very active truth seekers in the Australian scene. Scott has done a huge amount of work on legal aspects of the system, and his work, if you go to truth-now.com.au, pretty sure that's his website, or just Google Scott Bartle, or go to YouTube and look for a video called What the FUQ, Frequently Unanswered Questions of the Australian Government, you'll see what Scott has been doing to actually bring forth the truth. Rena's been working on local council issues in the main, has put out two movies called Pirates of the Suburbs, Part 1 and Part 2, both very detailed looks at corruption and manipulation at a local government level. Also a truth seeker, involved in many other things. Great panel that we have, lots of variety, lots of balance in the energies that come through. That particular show is on Sunday night in the US, Monday in Australia, and it's been going for 3 months or so, and we've had many, many different kinds of conversations about this aspect, about transitioning, about the repurposing of both us and the structures on the planet that we live on. This particular one, this particular show, goes into a fair bit of detail about the proposal that we had given only a few hours before. And you can tell from it we were quite tired because it had been a very, very intense experience. But we covered off, particularly in the second half, the details at that time of how we saw this particular exercise playing out. We've since refined it a little bit. Hope and I will be working in the next week and a half to refine our ideas to the point where we're going to present them to the Opal Group at their inaugural departure meeting in California before they go on tour. And from that point, spread it out to the alternative media, because this is a very, very much a process where we are asking the alternate media to put aside all differences and speak with one voice. And we think they will know exactly what to do, because everyone knows that the time is upon us. So that's the background to the show. I was initially going to play another session that I had with Andrew and a third party at the conference, but decided that the information is a little sensitive at this point and that we won't release it publicly for a period of time. This particular gentleman came forward with some information which needs to be essentially processed further development done before it's ready to be released, but very, very interesting conversation nonetheless, just a little premature. So what I decided to do was to replay this conversation because it probably reflects quite accurately the energetics of the initial presentation we did. If you want the link to actually purchase the Return to Atlantis live stream, can thoroughly recommend it. The presentations were fantastic. And really, such exemplary speakers all in the one room at the same place. at the same time. It was really terrific stuff, as you'll see. I'll dig up that and put it in the chat room once I've started the repurposing show. Hope you enjoy it. Join us as we go. It's going to be a one of the portals through which we'll be releasing information about this ongoing project, which is a $1 billion crowdsourcing campaign. We're not messing around anymore. Okay, this is the big one. This is the one that will fund all of those voices that have been working so hard on such meager resources. That's one of the prime focuses of this fund sourcing campaign. And it will also create a large enough asset to do very significant things with. And we're hoping it will just continue to grow and grow and grow. As we pointed out in the presentation, $2.6 billion was raised by crowdfunding last year. And we need to tap into that process because people seem to find it a particularly organic way of donating their energy to something that they resonate with. Very, very important tool that's appeared just in the nick of time so that we can actually use it to kickstart abundance. So without any further ado, I'll begin the file. I'm going to have to let this just play out. I'm a guest at someone else's house, and I'm going to get them to just shut the show down at the end of it because we'll have to depart before the show actually ends. And if there's any technical issues, unfortunately, I probably won't be here to fix them, but I think it should be fine. It should be fine. So this is the repurposing show from the day of the conference. It's essentially on the 6th of October, from my perspective, actually doing it. And it's myself, Hope Girl, Scott Bartle, Rina Iliades, talking ultimately about the $1 billion crowdfunding program. There was a little bit of discussion of other stuff at the start, but in the main we're reviewing the presentations at the conference, in particular the crowdfunding. Thanks very much for joining me. My travels will lead me to Toronto, Canada, and then back to LA in this coming week. It's going to be pretty intense, and again, keep an eye out on the times. The long conversation is partially assembled. I've got an update from Julian Wells, and that'll be going to air tomorrow. And the timing of that is looking like being possibly a bit later than usual, because I'll actually be doing some traveling that day as well. Okay, without further ado, I thank you once again for joining me. I see there is a few people in the chat room, which is great. I'm glad you found it was on and have joined me. And I'll pop on the show now, and I shall leave you to absorb the information. Please follow along as we release more details about this project. Very, very exciting concept. Everyone we're talking to is saying, yeah, this has got to be done. So thanks for joining me. I'll sign off now. I'll see you, and I will be live again tomorrow. Cheers. Thank you, universe. everybody, and welcome to today's repurposing show. I hope you're well wherever you are in the world. I'm in Florida here with Hope Girl at the Return to Atlantis conference, which just finished this afternoon. With us today is also Scott Bartle, who's in Perth, but with exciting news about a trip that he and his dad are about to embark on. And if I'm sounding a little tired, it's because it's been a really long 4 days, and the conference itself finished about 5 hours ago, and we've just been trying to regroup, have a meal, have some coffee, settle down, get organized for the show, and tell you about the fuse that was lit today at the conference. Some very, very interesting things are coming from it. We'll be going into quite a bit of detail about that and other things, and we hope you'll actually enjoy us. Looking in the chat room, I think the shift in time has probably caused a few people to not be able to attend to the show immediately, but it will be on the archive, and that's the main thing. So, without further ado, I'll say hello, Hope Girl.
Hello, everybody. Wonderful to be here. Wonderful to be by Chris's side in person in Florida. We've had an absolutely amazing adventure and journey, and I am so looking forward to sharing some incredible news with you about what our experiences have been like here, because it affects all of us on the planet.
It does. It does. And Scott Bartle in Perth. How are you today, Scott?
Very well, thank you. It's shaping up quite a nice day, and hopefully we're getting closer into spring over in this part of the world.
Yes, we're at the late summer here, late summer, early autumn. It's been absolutely gorgeous and very settled weather. Not much wind, a little bit of cloud cover, but it's consistently been, I've been watching it in Fahrenheit, 85 Fahrenheit, which is just nice and warm for us. Mm. And the beach that we're on is actually the west coast of Florida, so it's not a surf beach, to my disappointment. But we did get some waves the other day, which I managed to catch because there was a tropical storm, which passed by about 40, 50 miles out into the Gulf going north and put up quite a nice little swell for half a day there. So I actually managed to do a quick little bit of body surfing, Scott.
Very nice. Yeah, it's good to be able to get into the salt water again, and particularly you having had a winter to go through and not being able to jump in the ocean to fly to the other side of the world and get in the water would be very enjoyable.
It was. It was very good. And the interesting thing about it was that the sun here does not have the cut that the Australian sun does. I'd have to say, no way. No way do we not have an ozone layer hole there somewhere, Scott.
The
latitude difference. Florida's much closer to the equator than Melbourne is, or Perth is for that matter. And the amount of punch in the sun here is nowhere near what we get. So I didn't have to slather up with sunscreen, which was wonderful.
It's probably a good thing because a lot of those sunscreens are just loaded up with chemicals, which causes a wonderful chemical reaction on your skin.
On the other hand, one of the other reasons that the sun intensity is cut down here a bit is the intensity of the chemtrails.
Can't win, can you?
No. Regardless, we're in a nice, quiet little location, and our flatmates and some visitors are outside in the warm evening air having a nice chat. We'll be joining them after the show for a little while.
Very nice.
And the flat has air conditioning, so what can I say? We're set up for a nice chat here.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, Rena couldn't join us today. She's got some business to do. And we did shift the time on her, and that all happened at last minute. I realised late in the day here that the daylight saving time was going to catch something that we had to do after the conference, the time difference shift.
That would be why, because it didn't change at my end.
Yep. So the whole conference ended at 5 p.m. today. It's now in our time. It's around about 11 p.m. here, so about six hours ago, on a really, really high note. And in fact, before we actually go on with information about the conference itself and things that are going to spring from it, let's talk about what's happening with Scott and his dad in terms of the trip to Eastern Australia.
Okay. Well, at this stage it's planning up to be about a month-long trip, and much of that is driving, and as much as there's about 7,000 kilometres to travel. And starting off at Sunshine Coast, which is about 2 hours or so north of Brisbane on the east coast of Australia. Mm-hmm. And we've managed to line up a few visits with family in amongst that trip. And also at this stage, looking at meeting with some of the folk from the One People group in Brisbane. And then trying to tee up a visit with Jagamara. Mm-hmm. And then also, as we head south, looking to swing by or through with the Gold Coast group and Scott Kennedy. And then a little bit further south, get down to New South Wales and see these glyphs that are on the cliffs in the back of Gosford.
That would be incredibly interesting.
They are. I mean, I've seen them once before, and just to see these carvings in the rocks, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. You know that Joe Bragg's son was actually involved in discovering some aspects of that particular group of artifacts.
So wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, well, that's how Lisa Harrison actually got to know the Braggs. Via one of Joe's sons. So, yeah.
Interesting.
It is extremely interesting. So mm-hmm. you're after that, you'll be coming down to Melbourne?
Hoping to spend a bit of time with Joe and Vanessa around Lake Conjola. Mm-hmm. Seeing a few family in Sydney as well. That was where I was born. I've got a few family there. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, starting to head down through to Melbourne.
Yes, and when you're in Melbourne, I think it'll be time to visit certain people at The Age.
Hmm, definitely.
It will. It will indeed. And I presume Ken is accompanying you?
Yes, he is. Yep.
Excellent. So, now, are you heading back through Adelaide?
I am, yes. Yep.
And so anybody who's out there in Adelaide who might be interested in having Scott come around and present to a group, or simply just host Ken and Scott for a night, you won't be disappointed. I think they would make absolutely magnificent guests.
And thank you.
It would be a great experience to be able to talk to them, you know, one-on-one for some hours and really get some questions answered, if you've got any questions about some of the things that are going on this planet. In fact, I was approached by a lady today at the conference whose husband had been really attacked by the IRS over here, and she was just asking if there was any remedy that she thought that her husband could pursue. It was a little late. He'd already actually been processed, as they say. But the news for her was that the UCC filings and a lot of the sovereignty processes haven't had traction because the courts are just ignoring them. And the only what I suggested they look at, if she was really serious and wanted to put up a real fight, would be to carry out one of the processes that cancels his US citizenship and become making him a de jure citizen of the state he's in, provided it's still got a sovereign constitution in play, which a lot of them do. But that would, if the guy's a doctor, that would mean he would have to actually, in fact, cancel his medical practitioner's license. Not a really practical solution, and it's quite a drastic thing to have to do. So what that brings us to is a case of what is it that the systems are actually doing? Oh, before we do that, Hope, have you got an update on anything that happened before we actually arrived at this conference? I know that's a long time ago now.
Oh, I know. I'm in such a different space right now. An update in regards to what specifically?
Well, any of the projects that you've been working on, the software system that you've been working on with Shane, because you were working on that for a few weeks at his place.
Thank you very much for bringing me back to that page. Yes, so I was with Shane in Illinois for about a week, and we did as much as we could to get as much work done as we could. So the platform, I believe he said it was like something like 8 days away from being activated, and that would be the crowdfunding platform. And our plans are to put a handful of projects onto that platform known as beta testers. So everything would be live and the funding would be coming in from the people. But these first initial projects would be the ones who would be willing to test the particular platform just to make sure that we don't have any extra kinks that we need to work out. But I have to say once again that Shane's work, he's been working on this very hard for quite some time now, and it is incredibly brilliant, and it's a very high-quality platform, so I think that it's going to be the kind of sturdy structure that we need for these projects. These projects are so important to the planet, and especially something that we have coming up very soon. So we need the kind of robust platform that has the full capabilities that this one does. So that's something that we were working on together. It was also really nice to be able to connect with Shane and spend that intensive work week together working on that, as well as the Fix the World platform where we have all of our networking abilities. So those things are still underway. I think I got a little ambitious, just to be completely honest. I thought I can get a lot more done in a week than I actually was able to accomplish. So we're still working pretty hard on that, and we're still getting it out. But what this means for the people is that these things are in place, and they're coming up, and we're doing everything we can to get the work done. Just to remind everyone that web work, especially if you're not involved in it, it might seem simple. It might seem like, oh, just move that box to the left a couple of inches. But in order to do something like that involves hours of coding sometimes and lots of different things behind the scenes in the HTML web world, which is Shane's forte and not really mine, but I've dabbled into it as much as I can. So just know that there is a lot of hours that go behind every single thing that happens on a website, and it's really important that we have these platforms as sturdy as they can be and as robust as they can be, because what we are getting ready to bring forth is so important for the entire planet. And the projects that are coming forward onto this platform will change the planet, and so we need something as strong as we can get it, because this is for everyone. So it's been a really great week. And I think also that the important thing is, once again, going back to that basic concept of relationship development, being able to meet in person with partners, business partners, and to have these long conversations and to be able to develop those types of relationships where you are at that comfort level. Because what we're doing here, this is not just business as usual. This is the new paradigm business model, where rather than just working with someone on a shallow level and treating human beings as if, you know, they can be discarded and it's just business, we need to connect to each other at a heart level. And we also need to do it on a business level as well. So that's part of this whole process also, to be able to spend this intensive week together working on something that's so important for humanity. So it's been wonderful, even though we're not as far as we'd like to be. And just to wrap up that update, we're looking at something like 8 more days until we can get the crowdfunding platform up. And I've been here at the conference with Shane and with Chris as well and Andrew. It's been a wonderful experience. I've been traveling, so I've been a little wrapped up in that experience, because that's pretty intense as it is. But as soon as I return back home in a couple of days, I'll continue to keep working at the platform to get it up and launched for everybody. So we will definitely be, I mean, it's already up and launched, just getting some kinks worked out, but it's going to be really exciting what we got coming forward.
Plus, we've actually added to Shane's list of things to do.
We certainly have.
With a task that will have to be carried out after the crowdfunding platform is actually actually complete, but is absolutely a part of it and something that you're going to want to hear about. It's a very important component of what's coming.
I would also just like to say right now that anyone at any point in time, as you know, the website is fixtheworldproject.org, but you can also take a look at the crowdfunding platform itself. It's called crowdventures.com, I believe. So you can go take a look at that platform, or you can always link to that platform through the fixtheworld.org website. And then in addition to that, if you're interested in looking into Shane, there is a website from his company, which is valiant-international.com.
Excellent. Okay, well, that takes us up to the end of the week. My week was principally taken up with making preparations to leave, which, of course, were last minute and resulted in me actually staying up all night the night before I left, which worked well because I slept on the plane, which did shorten the recovery from jet lag somewhat. A380s are a pretty impressive aircraft, I must say. They are quite different to a 747. Doesn't really feel like a plane, actually. It feels more like a very, very large, rather luxurious bus. So, but it's still a long trip, and it still takes a day or two to actually recover from that, which fortunately I did have that time up our sleeve because we timed the flights to do so. So we were able to get here on Thursday night and spend a little bit of time with the people that arrived, and you know, spent Friday acclimatizing, setting up, etc.
Now, Chris, I have to ask you a question. So this is your first time in America?
It is.
Right? So I would really like to know if you could share with our listeners some of your first impressions coming from Australia of America, maybe some of the things that you had spoken to me about.
You're asking to me remember some, to me to remember something? I better
ask. Well, you were talking about the houses, the bigness of it all. Just
oh,
a little
yeah.
bit of a comparison from someone's perspective who's
yeah.
never been to this country before.
The sheer amount of infrastructure, the sheer number of people, not everywhere, of course, but as you fly from west to east across that lower portion of the United States, you go from one extreme to another. There are parts which are just farmland, but there are parts which are huge areas of urban development. Then you hit the East Coast and swing down into Florida. And Florida is so populated, it was almost like a dense part of Melbourne, but spread over hundreds and hundreds more square kilometres from one end to the other. It feels a little surreal to be driving for very, very long periods of time through such, should I say, high quality infrastructure for the most part. Because this is an area where there is a fair bit of money invested here in all of the buildings and, you know, the general makeup of the communities here. It just underlies the sheer number of people in this country. And of course the sheer amount of activity that actually yields at every level. And similarly with the roads. The roads are a lot more extensive than pretty much anywhere in the country of Australia. There's just a very, very extensive, I have to say, complex infrastructure. And, well, the folk are really fantastic, actually. I haven't actually come across any people I couldn't say weren't warm and friendly, as I knew I would find. And as I've said on this and other shows, people are the same the world over.
Right.
There is. We don't have a people problem. We have a management policy problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the folk down here have been terrific. The venue has been terrific. We've even got to know the landlords of the property that we're actually staying at this point in time. Lovely people. Totally what we expected to find. In the meantime, you've got little false flag events running off around the White House.
That's
just
right.
Just to keep us entertained at a political level.
Like on the day you arrived or the day after you arrived,
mm-hmm.
According to the mainstream media news, the American government has shut down And then there was a shooting at the White House.
Just a minor distraction.
Yes,
just
very
to give
interesting.
Give the press something to chew on other than the fact that the what they don't want to see, I think, is the fact that it doesn't make any difference whether the government's open or shut, that things still go on. You know, they wanted to distract us by staging what looks like another false flag event. However, we don't want to pay any, we don't want to pay too much energy to the system, do we?
No, we don't.
We don't. So, Scott, are you there still?
Yeah, your guys are breaking up a little bit there.
Breaking up a little bit, yeah. Is it, how is it now?
Yeah, it seems a little better there.
Good.
I got most of what you were saying there.
Okay, well, it was really just a comparison between the United States and Australia. Very similar countries, not dissimilar to going to New Zealand in a lot of ways, only it's just the density of the population.
I really like the US. The people over there are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they're lovely.
There's a stark contrast between the North and the South. And there's a few areas where there's just dramatic contrast between haves and have-nots.
We're in a pretty well-heeled area here, quite opulent, in fact, and haven't yet, you know, I haven't yet experienced that other side of life here where the lack is right there in front of you as well.
Yeah, it's sad in a way, and yet we know the reasons for why it is. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of those folk are not in the position to be able to research the material and come up to speed with what's actually happening and why they are enduring such conditions.
You're absolutely right, Scott. Most of them are completely taken up with just survival.
Survival.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, the system, particularly the last few years, with the actions of the banks on the mortgage system overall, not just they have just picked on a particular social group or a particular state or anything in particular. They've actually pulled up the pressure on every part of the banking system to apply that extra little bit of pressure just to make sure that people aren't really paying attention to what's going on at the higher levels. They're just struggling to survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple and incredibly effective ploy.
Mm.
So, yeah, and it's again, I have to say this, it's not the people of America that are the problem here, nor is it the real people of any country on this planet that are the problem. It's a management problem.
Well,
you go ahead.
I was going to say that seems to be one of the keys to the solution. Is it can be an external solution, as in we go, okay, so who's causing it, and go after that, or on an individual level, I'm doing more research into the aspect of okay, where are instances or what are instances in my immediate life where my rights as a human being are being abrogated, and what steps can I take to eliminate that? And so it's more of an internal focus on what's happening with me, and things that I'm in direct contact with that I can actually deal with in an approach.
But the objective there would be to create tools that the people can use.
Yes, and one of the things is the key is to understand those fundamental rights that we all have.
Indeed.
Without that, it's all a looking external to a tool that someone else prepared that they can cut and paste.
So in your researches at the moment, is anything emerging as a likely candidate that we can actually use to challenge those that are denying rights?
I'm liking those some of those explorations into what's been going on with the birth certificate and such.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm seeing that key to be before even attempting to use any of that is that thorough grasp of who you are, your rights, and some of the instances of where they've been taken from you, and to be able to view it in a way that is almost like from the neutral perspective. So you look at what Andrew does with his sharing of the material from the Akashic Record and as the galactic historian, and he's presenting it from that neutral perspective. It's not these guys are bad, or they've done this, they're horrible. Okay, yes, we can apply that assessment ourselves. And so what I'm seeing is that it's almost like the removal of that judgment of this is bad or this is that. I mean, for example, we've shared previously that some of the learnings that we've gone through over this past year or so have resulted in us, as a result of being pushed into certain sticky situations where you go, oh, wow, if I wasn't pushed in that direction, I wouldn't have discovered this. So just that alone is an example of where you can take something which is potentially labelled with a negative connotation and you've just turned around and said, well, okay, it's proved beneficial in one sense. So take away that label of good or bad and just look at some of these instances of what's happening in your life. And I mean, I'm still working through these in my head and websites and how to work on some of these things. But I suspect that the treating of the aspects of your rights is a key point.
Indeed it is. In fact, it absolutely does start with the birth certificate and the usage of the birth certificate in the fashion that actually seems to be carried out by the system is a direct abrogation of rights right there. So we move into the system with an abrogation of rights.
I mean, you could potentially look at it and say, okay, who created this birth certificate? And you trace it back to a corporate government. And this is the angle I'd been following for a long time.
Indeed.
A pretender or an imposter who becomes the tool, the label or the identification of you and your interaction with the system from day zero. Or at least date registration, which may be 6 weeks after your birth. And the way I was looking at it was, okay, so this entity that created this birth certificate was an imposter, was a fraudster. That would surely make everything that hangs off that birth certificate and all of the documents thereafter an absolute nullity, if you like.
Fruit of a poison tree.
Where have we heard that before?
We've heard that many times before, and it applies.
And yet, despite the identification of the illegitimacy or the fraudulent nature of these corporate governments and these pretenders, they have continued nonetheless to abrogate your rights, deny your ability to seek substantiation, avoid attempts to validate their authority. And that boils down to a complete abrogation of your rights, which is more than enough evidence of the slavery system. So it's and the thing that I think might be a very useful point is that those who are perpetuating that system are also victim of it, and meaning their rights are being abrogated themselves. And that, mate, is how do we share that information with others to illustrate that they are similarly their rights are being abrogated.
Mm-hmm.
Experience at the moment is shaping up that whilst ever it's a confrontation, as in you're going head-to-head with them, even if it's the seeking of the substantiation of their authority, is there's a... we can somehow share that, okay, they're in this with us and their rights are being abrogated by the nature that they are perpetuating the system, that the opportunity for them to go, oh, hang on, I'm out. I'm not going to support this.
Surely.
So we do that? Not entirely sure. I suspect that that may be a key to the puzzle.
Well, we'll keep you guys informed as we go along. And you've, of course, Scott, you're still pushing forward with liens against a number of different commercial traders, as it were, pirates on the seas of commerce. How are they going at this stage?
They appear to at least be holding some folk back. They can see the legitimacy of them and causing or... But their actions have been chosen accordingly to usually cease or slow down. So having some success there, they're not an easy tool to work with and very easy to get wrong, in as much as if you get them wrong, essentially the full force of that lien can be reversed back against you.
That's motivation to get it right, of course, and it's in fact one of the reasons why the use of liens as an enforcement tool for the UCC filings was something that I know Heather felt wasn't practical on a mass scale because of the danger of that reversal if you got the paperwork wrong. And given its complexity, that was going to be...
Exactly.
It's certainly going to be an outcome.
Yeah.
However, but what that did do was leave the UCC material without any enforcement from a financial point of view, from a practical point of view. The only real enforcement for it would be if people actually took up the situation that's really being offered, which is to reclaim your sovereignty, took that up on a large scale.
Mm.
And if they do that, then that opens so many opportunities for shifting the system in whatever direction that the people want to shift it.
It seems to be clearer and clearer that the key to this is the rediscovery of our personal sovereignty.
Oh, yes. That is critical.
Yeah, and not by filling out a piece of paper, as in, if I fill out this document this way, I will become a sovereign.
Yeah, well, there is a paperwork process. In fact, there's more than one.
However, the distinction I draw... is it does not make you a sovereign.
No, it does not.
It gets the recognition by those who are claiming that you are not.
In fact, it also doesn't actually guarantee that you are going to stand in the space that a sovereign needs to stand in. You really need to know how to behave.
That's the key.
The role you're going to actually take in any interaction with the system. And it's, a lot of the time it's not what you think it is.
Mm. No, it's being able to be the sovereign first, and then share that with others.
Yes.
And it's no amount of box-ticking paper exercises will make you the sovereign that you have the potential to be.
Indeed. And part of the process of...
And so to be means that to be a sovereign is act as a sovereign.
Exactly.
If you do not as a sovereign, as in you're handing over your rights left, right and centre to anyone who comes along, my friend uses the analogy, you've stepped off the throne. Hmm. If you've stepped off the throne, you've given someone else ruling power over you and they're sitting on the throne and you're sitting down kissing their knees or whatever.
The entire idea of sovereignty is something that the general mainstream don't even consider to be possible, and this is becoming very clear, that the level of understanding is so low out there in mainstream. We have quite the educational process to put people through before they'll actually understand what it is that they've really been denied and what they actually are. So the sovereignty issue is something that's very near and dear to my heart, and I know your heart and your heart, Scott, and hopes, and can't underlie the importance of actually spending some time to really get to understand what it means to be sovereign, because it's quite literally a role equivalent to that of the monarchs, some of the royal families that actually exist on this planet, such as the Queen of England. It actually puts you on a status level with the Queen of England.
It goes pretty deep, too. It goes beyond just paperwork and a lawful status. Energetically, it goes very, very deeply.
It does. It does. And you know, we've seen a couple of great examples this weekend of people who really know what it is to be who they are. Andrew Bartzett calls it the great I am presence. And you know, the other speakers have their own frames of reference for being in that state. But it's something that I think if people, and I think, Scott, one of the problems is that because the information about it has been removed from the collective in the common sense, you know, we're just not taught about these things. We don't know what the behaviour is. We don't know what the rights and responsibilities are, because that's not shared with us. Not shared with us at all.
No.
Moving that information back to the collective, not just the documentary side of it, but the actual behavioural side of it, is part of the process we're going to have to go through. You know,
exactly.
Abrogation of rights is certainly a starting point for making a claim on your sovereignty. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, exactly, and that's probably the value of having a good poke around in my father's website, absentlimits.net.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting into a good discussion regarding rights and also the origin of them, and looking at some of these documents in history, such as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And for a lot of us, we've looked at that and gone, oh, look, great, that's our rights. Well, explore it in a little bit more detail, and you find that there's some individual giving you some rights. Not the creator.
Exactly.
Now, if there's someone else in between you and the creator giving you rights, is there something wrong with that picture already?
Well, that gets back to the actual sovereignty process that would separate you from the state.
Yes.
One of the problems with it is that if people do that just as a trickle, if there's only a few numbers and they're processed through the courts, the courts will look at it, and they can find fault with anything they choose. The colour of the paper, the colour of the ink, the grammar, the punctuation, and they can say, oh, that's not valid. And because they actually run the courts, and they actually employ the people who enforce through the courts, they can just toss it out, whether it's valid or not. But think of this instead. If a great number of people were doing this, it becomes the social norm. It becomes the new social agreement. They couldn't do anything about it if they tried.
Agreed.
The people simply aren't playing their game anymore. We could actually claim our sovereignty on the back of a paper bag and a crayon. And
well,
all you'd have to write down is I am.
Yeah. One of the reasons I think that will work is the difference in the intent of those two interactions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I would, the impression I'm getting is, you want something from that court. The second one is you're telling them,
yeah,
I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's a notice. You're giving them notice of who you are.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, just that the difference in the intent, the wanting something from the court is a wanting of recognition, which means you're creating an authority in that court. The other one of going down the path of, this is what we're doing, get out of my way, basically, is you're not wanting anything from that court or establishment. You're just saying, this is how it is,
exactly,
buddy.
Exactly. You thought you were in charge.
And
but the support is
when there's multiple people doing it.
Yeah. It's always been a numbers game. This has become very clear to us, and it's the subject of great discussion this weekend. We've had many discussions with other attendees at the conference. And it resulted in a presentation that we're going to be discussing in quite a bit of detail in the second half of the show. And it leads directly to the repurposing exercise that we've begun and are in the process of doing at this point in time. So right at this moment, what we'll do, Scott, is in order to actually set the scene for a description of the presentation, which absolutely plays into sovereignty and into establishing the new, you know, because I know one of your great great points in this discussion is that we're not trying to turn this into a fight with the system. We want to turn our energy to something new, create the new. The old is so irrevocably broken, our energy is wasted on trying to fix it. It doesn't want to be fixed, and it wasn't built to work properly in the first place. It was built to actually benefit the people who own it and run it. So what we'll do now is we'll give a rundown of the speakers at the conference, because the every speaker that was at this conference added a unique aspect to the information. There was commonality all the way through, crossover all the way through, but in each case a different perspective, a different and worthwhile perspective. And to begin with, the location in Sarasota, Florida. Why Sarasota, Florida? In fact, Hope, it turned out that this conference was incredibly significant in literally in the history of this planet. So I don't know about you, but I was gobsmacked by what Lisa Renee had to say about the location.
Absolutely. And everybody in that room was when she finally made that disclosure of why we are where we are and how important it is to be here.
Indeed. So the conference actually began on the Friday night with an on the beach ceremony called a Galactivation by Dr. Dream and Laura Eisenhower. And that was essentially an hour of spiritual guidance, reminding us who we are, reminding us why we're here, that everybody has a task, that we all came here for a reason, and that we should celebrate the fact that we're all together in this place and in this time. And also included some, literally, aromatherapy for everybody that kind of linked everybody, because we're all having the same experience with it. As we did with an aspect of sound therapy, I suppose you would call it, music therapy, with Tibetan singing bowls.
And a gong.
And a very interestingly wielded gong. It was quite unique, and I'll try it out one day if I can find a gong, because it sounded amazing.
Well, the whole thing was magical.
It was.
Absolutely magical.
Staged at dusk, beautiful sunset. The wind died down just at sunset, so it wasn't too noisy.
On a white crystal sand beach.
Interestingly, the sand actually is so reflective that even if there's only a little bit of light coming from the sky, the sand is the brightest thing in sight once the sun goes down. It actually stands out in the dark like it's actually phosphorescing, which there may be a touch of phosphorescence in it, but it was actually very, very pleasant underfoot. Very pleasant underfoot. Though I have to say, I haven't yet walked on it in the hot sun to see whether it's actually cold in the hot sun. We were extremely busy during the middles of the day on both days of the conference and the day before, so in these days after the conference, when it's a little bit quieter, we will sally forth and test that out. So the conference began on Saturday morning. The conference proper began with Laura Eisenhower with a really information-packed session on creation and aspects of creation. And if you're familiar with her work at all, she's rapid-fire, extremely energetic presenter who compressed an 8-hour presentation down to 2 hours.
Ah.
So you could tell in the audience who hadn't seen her work before, because their heads were spinning.
Yeah, at that point. She was talking so fast, and she was going through slide after slide after slide. There was so much information, and everything that came out was basically, from my perspective, it was like, you know, the true history of creation. And she cut through all of the different lies and the illusions that we've been fed. And it was just, yeah, heads were spinning.
Mm-hmm.
It was that, the information was that intense.
The energy that she works in is the Gaia energy, the divine feminine energy. And that was the perspective that she presented the information from. And it was very... I think I'm just about to pull my lead out here. It was very, very intense and a really nice way to start it off. Secondly, after lunch, Lisa Renee. Now, Lisa's had been literally in seclusion for several years. She has not presented publicly for about 2.5-3 years.
Mm.
It's apparently for her protection. She's not wanted by the system, so she was keeping a low profile, but she considered this to be such an important event, she literally came out of seclusion to do it. And she and her colleagues actually set up special energetic barriers to make sure that the conference center was protected for the entire weekend, and there were others who were also protecting the entire area to make sure that we weren't interfered with. And we had a very, very nice energy throughout the entire conference, so there was a lot of energetic security actually happening. One of the reasons she did that was because she actually revealed something hitherto that no one in the room had been told, was that the area of Sarasota in Florida, which has an enormous quartz reef in it, was actually the location where Gaia's energy actually entered the planetary sphere billions of years ago. And the area has a special name, which you will all instantly recognize. It's San Grail. It's the Holy Grail. The fact that Gaia has been reawoken and is re-establishing his ascension on this planet after a long period of low vibration, virtually asleep, and that this area is the area that that energy first entered this world, it's extremely significant from a grid point of view, from the electromagnetic grid, the energy grid of this planet, that this area, which has just recently become highly active, be celebrated and consecrated, which is work that was being done in the background by, you know, by her group and by others. So, very significant place, very significant indeed, and everyone was pretty much jaws hitting the floor at that point, especially as the presentation in the morning had been largely about aspects of the history of Gaia itself. Herself, should I say. Lisa's presentation was a view of the history of this planet from the perspective of the mentors and guides that she actually works with, which is an off-planet race, largely from Syria. She works with the Syrians and others, but there is a council, one in particular, which is quite literally apparently from another universe and is assisting, you know, the other races in this universe here to help us resolve this problem on Earth. And it was a historical perspective, a very long historical perspective from their perspective as to what actually has happened on this planet over tens of millions of years. That was another huge dump of energy and a huge dump of information. Hope, anything you wanted to say about Lisa's work?
Well, the work was incredible. Again, the information that came forth in her presentation was, at first it was gentle, and then as she eased into it, the intensity of the energy and of the information came through. There was so much passion that was delivered in the message, and some of the things that she said were really difficult to hear, and I by no means am going to try to recap exactly what was said. I do recommend listening to the archive of the live stream from the event, because it was really important what came out. But what I can say is that I myself personally was heavily affected emotionally by the information that came forth from her presentation, and I know that there were a handful of people in the room who were welling up with emotion and tears, because it was stuff that needed to be said, stuff that addressed the suffering on the planet, and the things that needed to stop, and how we could stop them and why this was so important and why we were stopping it now. So it was, you know, tears of pain, tears of relief, and tears of joy, all wrapped into one very, very powerful presentation. And there's a reason why it took her 3 years to be able to come out again to make this presentation, this presentation known. So I highly recommend that people catch that. If you'd like to go ahead and, Chris, just let us know when people might be able to get their hands on that particular archive,
no,
if you
that,
know.
The archive is available now, and in fact, I'll put it in the chat. If you Google N5D events and return to Atlantis live stream, you'll pick up this link immediately. And just to round out what Hope just said about the information from Lisa, Lisa's, for me, the most important aspect of Lisa's information was that she was here to literally start revealing to the planet vital bits of information that the collective has forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
She's returning information to the collective. There's more to come. And beyond that, there is a need to act now to actually move the situation we find ourselves in forward. The time is now. And as Hope said, there was a couple of facts, particularly about the abuse that's being carried out, still being carried out, it's been carried out for a very long time, and it still goes on the human population by elements of the groups that are actually really in control behind the scenes, and that has to stop. That is a piece of suffering which needs to be brought to a close. We have learned the lessons required, and we have the means to actually do that. We just need to exercise them. So very, very, very gripping presentation. So Saturday night, we actually had a very pleasant dinner on the beach, and it was sort of like a very long repeat of the previous evening, where there was, although this instance we actually ate on the beach, so it was longer, but there was a lot of conversation. There were people moving from one group to another and making connections, you know, exchanging information, not just about the presentations, but about things they were involved in personally. The other thing Lisa, in fact, said was that everybody who was at that conference, everybody who listened to the live stream, everybody who was being touched by the information at that conference were part of the history of this planet and needed to hear the information. So if you're listening to this radio show now, then that information needs to reach you. So we'd actually encourage you to listen to the live stream to get the details of that. It answers a lot of questions. But do remember, Lisa is giving the perspective of a particular grouping of people who are assisting us in moving past this particular part of human history. It's information that actually dovetails in with information from Andrew Bartzis and others about exactly what's happened in the last, say, 50 million years. It's just doing it from a different perspective, watching a particular group's views on what's happened rather than looking at a bigger picture of the interactions of many groups. So it's extremely useful as a point of reference. So this morning we actually started the presentations with Tom Lesher, who is an astrologist par excellence, extraordinaire, who put on a fantastic presentation about astrology. Amazingly passionate guy, incredibly knowledgeable, and he really is. It was like watching a violinist perform. It was a piece of art what he was doing. He was absolutely in the information. He embodied the information. So it was, apart from being a thoroughly entertaining guy, he was able to actually express all of the properties and characteristics of the astrological interactions that were going on in such a matter-of-fact way, straight out of his head. The amount of information that was coming out of this guy's head was just fantastic, and certainly increased the understanding of everybody in the room as to how astrology is simply it's an absolutely a representation of what's playing out on this planet. You know, it's like we're the Earth is a cog in a giant machine, and you could live on Earth and have the experiences, but when you observe the movement of all the cogs around the planet, you're actually seeing a version of what's going on the planet, if you know how to interpret it.
Well, they're all influences. Each planet has a certain influence, and he described the influence of each and every one of them and what it means to us in our day-to-day life, and he talked about different points in history where one planet was in a certain location with another planet and how those influences came together to help to influence the particular events that were going on in history. The 60s was one of the examples that came out. So it was very enlightening to see how the different planets basically truly have brought in certain energies that have helped certain events to play out.
And he, unlike Lisa Renee and Laura Eisenhower, who were doing very much very long-term historical perspectives, he was actually focusing on now and on next year, 2013, 2014. And the bottom line, as you'll see when you look at the presentation, is that we're going to go through a process of that which is not wanted falling away, and a reformation of, you know, whatever's required to make it work the way that we want it to do. It's exactly what we would expect to see and hear. Things falling away, a clearing.
Cutting it off,
clearing out that which we don't need to give a chance for the new to grow. It's exactly the same kind of message that many, many other people are putting forth at the moment. He was showing where it was in the astrology. And, you know, there's going to be periods of time where it becomes very intense and other periods of time where it backs off, which is what we've been experiencing. But no real indication of some great disaster. It's simply clean-up time. Make it work a different way time. Great change all the way across the next year and a half, on a very large scale. So very, very interesting presentation it was. Now, that was followed by lunch and by a presentation. Originally, it was supposed to be a presentation just by Andrew Bartzis, as a galactic historian, putting forth, you know, more information and a commentary about things that had gone on. Andrew's been the subject of some very, very heavy psychic attacks over the last couple of weeks. It was made very clear to him that certain people on this planet did not want him to present, and it was serious enough that he required help from many, many different people to actually successfully deflect the attacks. And he actually stated that he believed they were trying to kill him and would have done so had he not had help. Pretty serious situation. He survived it, he presented, and he didn't present alone. Originally he was going to do a presentation by himself, and he was going to talk in the main about factions and the way that factions actually are part of the divisive aspect of the system. The factions that he was referring to are those in the alternative media. They're part of the very large group of people that are observing what's going on geopolitically, spiritually, and energetically across the planet, and pointing out that the divisions we see amongst ourselves are in fact effects of the system. It's what the system wants. Pointing out that the people who saved him came from two different factions who normally do not work together because there's a political division between them. But for the greater good, they put that aside and actually cooperated to make sure that this conference went ahead and all the information that needed to come out came out. Which is really, really focusing on a serious issue that we need to act as one in order to move forward. We've got to put aside these divisions, got to be aware of where they're coming from, accept and respect boundaries, accept and respect other perspectives, and for an objective that both have, because we're all doing the same job, work together. So, the presentation itself wasn't quite what I expected. I had asked Andrew, in fact, to, there's just a couple of items, a couple of aspects that I wanted him to talk about, and they related to plans that we spoke a little bit about on the show last week. We started talking about this, about a crowdfunding campaign that we had in mind. And in the weeks since then, we've actually had a lot more detailed discussions amongst ourselves and a lot of discussions with people attending the conference, and refined and added to the overall picture, because we're presenting an overview at the moment. You know, much detail to be worked out, but we have an overview of what we feel would actually move this whole situation forward. And what Andrew did, instead of just talking only about the factional aspect of this, he actually enabled a presentation that Hope and I were involved with, and we were able to put forward the overview that we're actually working on at the moment. And I do need to point out that it is an overview, and it is in fact something that will have to require a lot of detail and work from a lot of people. But it's an approach that we, every time we actually describe this to anybody, they go, yeah, we have to do this. This is going to work. This is what we need to take us out of work, out of this doldrum, out of this plateau that we're on, and into the next phase with enormous amount of momentum.
I'd like to go so far as to say that some of the feedback that I've received when this thing has been presented
mm-hmm.
has been, oh my God, that's the best idea I've ever heard in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's how far it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a music break. Hope and I are going to have a quick glass of water, and we're going to explain it to you. So stick around. It's going to get very interesting. You won't be sorry. And I'll pop on our favourite piece of music, because I haven't heard it for a few days and I think I need to. And it's on my list here, right in front of me. Ah, right at the bottom. About 4 minutes. You might want to dash to the bathroom or grab a glass of water yourselves. We'll see you in 4 minutes' time. And we're back. And we're back. One of the things that we were presented with by, in fact, we got, both Hope and I received several just little gifts from people who are attending the conference, just as thank yous for the work that we're doing. And I just wanted to thank all those individuals. We had a fantastic welcome from everybody that was there. There's a lot of people been following along the work, and we really have to appreciate, thank and appreciate everybody that follows our work. There's people in the chat room here. The chat room's built up. It looks like there's 30 or 40 people in it. Well, at least 30 anyway, I'm pretty sure. I won't stop to count them just at the moment. But we had a fantastic welcome from everybody. And
we certainly did. And I would just like to say that it is a little overwhelming at times because, you know, when you're doing a radio show, you're just, you know, usually we're all sitting here on Skype and in our own separate places. And right now we're lucky enough for Chris and I to be sitting in the same room yet again, which is wonderful. But it's a twisted perspective because you seem like you're alone when you're sitting here talking. And then all of a sudden, the people come up, the people respond on Facebook and in the chat room. And then when you go out and you meet them, they speak about things that you spoke about on a show. So what we're doing is really effective. And that's something that's really hitting home for both myself and for Chris, too, I believe.
Oh, yeah,
that
absolutely.
It's incredibly effective, and it's working.
And it's the depth of feeling that is expressed by everybody that we meet, which is a profound acknowledgement that what we're doing, it matters and is important and only serves to motivate us incredibly to keep going.
And can I go so far as to say it is valued? I'd like to use that word, that it is valued, because that's important, because we are going to start talking about value in a little while now with some of the ideas that we've been putting forth in what I would like to say was an explosion today at the conference. We lit some serious fires today, and we're going to keep that fire going because it's pretty big what's coming forward here.
It is, and it's what's needed. It's what's needed to get everybody to act as one.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what all this comes down to, acting as one. But before we do that, I just, as a final part of thanking the people for their gifts, etc., there's a couple of people who, in particular, I'd like to thank, which are Nancy Holzmiller and her sister Terry from Wisconsin, who gave me a terrific mug. And another lady whose name I cannot remember, and I do apologize at the moment, who gave me a lovely bar of soap made by her very young daughter, which was really touching. And there was more, but you know, that was it's just a lovely part of really the first conference that I've actually ever been to on this subject. So, had a really good time overall from a social perspective, met many, many new people. And we'll be here for a couple more days yet, and we're actually going to it's going to be just as busy over the next couple of days. We've got meetings set up, there's some interviews I've got to do, and no doubt other things will pop up. There's a number of the people who are at the conference are staying on for a few more days, so there'll be more interacting going on, so it isn't quite over yet.
I would just like to take one moment too, to let everybody know just how dedicated Chris is, being here with him and seeing him. We've done the conference today, there's his radio show right now, but also while we've been here, he's been running around with reporter, very important conversations, doing everything in his power to make sure that these conversations are captured and archived in some way. I think the plan is to put many of them up on YouTube or to broadcast these conversations, but these are important conversations that have been had just to try to capture the entire process, because what's going on this planet right now is so important, and to capture every bit of that information, that's a lot of work. So I just want to make sure that he's recognized now for the work that he has done, because there's a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes.
Indeed, and I would also like to acknowledge the same thing for you, Hope, because the amount of conversations that Hope has, the multitasking is extraordinary. What did it take for you to get from one side of the room to the other this afternoon?
Yes.
An hour and a half?
An hour. It took me an hour and a half to walk from one side of the room to the other because I was stopped by about 18 people individually from one side of the room to the other who wanted to have conversations. And, you know, part of the Fix the World mission is to make sure that the people's voices are heard. And when you put that out there, there's a lot of people who need their voices heard. So that's why I'm here. When I come out into public like this, which is still quite new to me. Australia was a real first. So here I am continuing on the Fix the World Hope for America tour, which we're on right now. And we have to be here for the people because they need to be able to express themselves. So, yeah, it is pretty intensive with the multitasking because you open your mouth and you deliver a message and it ignites the fire in people. And they want to express and they need to express. And that's why we're here, for each other.
Indeed. So, Scott, that's one of the reasons why I'd like you to come to every conference in the future.
Yes.
Spread the load a bit.
It will be I would love to participate.
Yeah.
And I can echo those thoughts of the work that goes on with what you put into these radio shows and hope it is a lot of work to...
It is, and we're getting
nice work, guys.
We don't necessarily, we don't necessarily want to ask for a lot of help, but we do get help. I've got my right hand person, Renee. I was going to say right hand man, but that wouldn't be an accurate description at all. Right hand, I don't want to be stereotyping anybody.
Well, she is a human.
She is. No, she's definitely a human. But she'll probably laugh when she hears this. But no, she's been a tremendous assistance. And you know, Hope has fantastic assistance from Peppy and others on her council. And Scott is working with Uwe and Ken and many other people. And it's just, we're just doing what we have to do to make this this whole situation work. Or as Andrew says, to actually co-create our exit from the matrix, which I think is a really great turn of phrase. We know there's 3D stuff that we have to do to shift the collective into this new phase, into this new state, and that's what the rest of this conversation is about, repurposing of the collective. So, and by the way, for those of you who've been following the information and from Teal Scott about her vibrational artwork and who are interested in a very nice implementation of the artwork, they've had some jewellery made with the artwork featuring as little pendants of various sizes and shapes. Absolutely gorgeous. They brought a selection of them down to the meeting. They're very well done. And can thoroughly recommend them if you want to wear a piece of Teal's artwork. They are available. Just I'm pretty sure they'll be on their website fairly soon. The other thing that will be on the website for those that wish to actually literally post any of this material in public, which is really the best place to put it, because the more people who are around it, who see it, the more effect it will have. There's high-resolution versions of all of her images being published on her website very soon as downloadable PDFs. So if you want to do a poster, a series of posters, or if someone had a brilliant suggestion of actually putting some of her artwork on the bottom of his truck and driving it around so that it actually kind of affects everybody and everything around it for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Perfect. If you've not run across this particular concept, if you go to sovereignmedia.net, look up the reading room and look at the archive for the discussion between Andrew Bartzis, Teal Scott and Nelia Benz and myself about 2 weeks ago. There was a very detailed explanation of how her
conscious artwork, the vibrational artwork, functions, what it does, and how it can be implemented. Very, very powerful tool because it actually lifts consciousness for quite a distance around it. It's an artwork which has a consciousness.
I do like that one of your suggestion of the Facebook-sized image.
Yes, I must remind her that that needs to be done. I've seen actually a few people who've squeezed one of her existing images to shape in, and used it in Facebook already. There's a few people already doing that.
Yes, there are.
And one thing I do want to ask her is what effect that distortion that graphic distortion has, because you have to squeeze it into a long thin thing. Most of them aren't long thin things, they are pretty much square or slightly rectangular. She'll probably say, oh, nothing, it'll work just the same in the way that she does. And before we move on, actually, we'll actually speak of Teal's presentation, because the rest of it's going to be describing what happened with Andrew's presentation. Teal is a vibrational being. She sees the world in terms of vibration. She teaches in terms of how to deal with it using vibration. You know, she's got some great ideas of how to deal with real life problems at a vibrational level. And she's absolutely delightful presenter, and did a question and answer session at the end, which was really simple and practical, and everyone got a lot out of it, and altogether a very, very it was like the dessert at the end of a really good meal. That was the best way I could describe it. It was just a delightful thing to be in front of, to be around, and a very nice way to end off the conference. So, did you have any particular feelings about Teal's presentation you wanted to express?
Yes, and you described it very well as far as the work that she does, and especially being able to come up with some tools for people to use in their everyday life. But the reason why I thought it was so perfect to have her close out the conference, because we had all of these speakers with different perspectives, and each one was bringing forth some really intense information. And sometimes when you have that intense information, things like, you know, disclosing truths, and people in the audience might be dealing with a whole range of emotions that would come up when you learn about some of the things that have happened, some of the things that have been kept from us. And basically, in order to close it out with Teal was perfect, because you didn't leave the audience high and dry with all of those emotions to try to then go home and somehow process through them and sort them out. You gave them, Teal's presentation gave all of the people there and everyone listening on the live stream as well and in the archives, gave those people the tools that they needed to figure out how to cope with the vibrations that came from the emotions, that came from the information that was presented.
Yeah.
So it was perfectly done. And as a matter of fact, I would hope to see any kind of disclosure of truth, especially if it's disturbing, which a lot of it is these days.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have the good with the bad. I think every session, every presentation should end with something like that, because that gives the people the skills that they need and the tools that they need to cope and process it through without going into a state of fear or hopelessness. And that's I think, is vitally important, and that's actually the reason why I chose the name that I chose for my pen name is Hope Girl. It's for that same purpose.
Yeah, there's a great vibration about that. You know, it's just absolutely spot on. So the balance of speakers was fantastic, and full marks to Helene Libson and Greg Prescott, who put the speakers together, put the conference together. It was it ran without any glitches at all. It was very, very smooth. Lots of one of the things expressed was that everybody had a difficult week. Anyone who was going to this conference seemed to have a difficult week the week before. It seemed to be like there was resistance to people going to it, and in fact, energetically, there was resistance to people going to it. I certainly experienced that. Hope experienced that. And the speakers, some of the speakers especially, experienced that, and Andrew is the most dramatic example of that. The system did not want this meeting to take place and be successful, but it did, and it was. The part we're going to talk about now is what happened during Andrew's presentation. And Scott, I want you to join in on this as much as possible. You've heard about 80% of what we were proposing. We did develop a couple of new ideas over the weekend, which are important and do round out the whole thing to, you know, make it more of a complete package. So
sure, I'm all ears, and I'll jump in where I can.
Yep. So here's how it goes. In about mid-September, there was a big energetic shift, and that doesn't always express for me as in energetic terms. What it does is I tend to get information and things presented to me, things that are new. And it turned out that that particular week, at the end of that week, I had the idea, based on discussions that I was having with Hope and other things that were going on, that one of the things that should be possible is to put on a crowdsourcing campaign by the people, for the people, to raise so much money that it could actually kickstart everything that we've been trying to kickstart on no resources. One of the things that's been a characteristic of the last few years in particular is that the system has been dangling in front of everybody in the alternative community the prospect that there was these mythical resources that were going to magically appear at some point and allow us to put the correction of this position that we find ourselves in into motion, that to give us the big push forward. We've all been sitting here essentially bitching because we ain't got enough money to actually do it the way it needs to be done and to get it done quickly, which is what we all want to do. If we don't get it done quickly, this is going to take decades. And me, no, I'm not interested in that. Not interested at all. However, the system has been dangling things in front of us like the global settlements, the prosperity payments. And what was that one that you mentioned earlier, Hope? That was another one that was the...
revaluation.
The revaluation, no, the stuff that Neil Kiernan's group is...
Oh, collateral account.
The collateral accounts, okay. The revaluation of the dinar and the dong and other currencies is another one. The original Nasara pre-9/11 was another one. For many, many years now, it's been dangled in front of the alternative community like the check that never arrives in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll be next Tuesday. What was that you said? You've been saying for weeks, Scott, oh, the RV is going to happen next Tuesday. No worries.
Oh, yeah. Whenever the dinar comes up, it's always, oh, we just had to get this final signature by Christine Lagarde or something. We've got that, but it could not have happened until we got this, and it's going to go through on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's so, right. That's right.
I've heard so many things like that. We just take the piss and say, oh, can't happen today. It's got to be a Tuesday. So
exactly. If something comes up, it'll happen on Tuesday after the RV.
Mm.
No problem.
Exactly.
In other words, it's becoming a bit of a joke and really obvious that we're just being messed with. The effect that it has is to keep people sitting on their hands because they're expecting this problem to be solved by a check shoved under the door by a person or persons yet unknown. And that includes, you know, there's some private benefactors out there that have a lot of money that would make a difference if they got off their hands and actually funded some of the, for instance, the free energy projects that are around, but they don't do it. So how do you do this? Where's the, you know, the value is us, so where's the abundance? Why is it that it's not appearing? Well, we've just been tricked into inaction. That's all that's going on here. We've just been lulled into expecting there's going to be a handout of some kind at some stage. My conclusion was, it's not going to happen. Why would the system take an action which is going to cause the system to end? It's illogical, and it's right in front of us that the solution is to abandon any aspect of waiting for them or anyone from outside of the people to actually come and do something that can shift the fortunes of this planet in a completely different direction and change how everybody lives. Why would they do it? The system exists to energetically harvest us, and all of these programs that are being presented to us actually emanate from the system. They're all an aspect of the system. So, you know, how can we possibly speculate that they are going, that the system is going to allow these things to take place that would end it. That's ridiculous. And when you view it in that fashion, the question is, well, what do you do about it? And what Hope and I started to talk about was, well, you know, how could we do it ourselves? Why don't we do it ourselves? Now, Hope's just had really good success the last few months on crowdfunding. She's worked out, you know, that the energetic aspect is the key thing. You know, you have to engage people at an energetic level, and you have to actually make it an exchange. There has to be a perception that, that they get something of value. Even if it isn't directly to them, it's something that's of value to them emotionally or intellectually or both. And if you can strike that chord, then the actual the energy comes through from them. And it's really a pretty simple formula in the end. It's just simply an exchange of value, equitable exchange of value. And the skill is in presenting it in a fashion which actually completes that circuit, if you like, so that the currency does flow. Really simple when you get down to it. So we had this discussion, and we came to realization of a very simple thing. The abundance is already there. It's us, and it's in the energy that we already have stored. All we have to do is release it. We simply have to have the confidence that we, the people, can do something with it, that we can organize ourselves and take the energy that we already have, that we can already use, and put it to use in stimulating parts of the system that require more information. And by that I mean the rest of the collective who's still getting information from the mainstream media. We need to feed them an enormous volume of truth as soon as possible, delivered directly to their door. To do that, we need to actually amp up the activity in the alternative media with resources. We need to actually prove to people that there's other technology out there that's being hidden from them by presenting them with free energy devices and healing devices. And there's a couple of other things that are on the list as well. But essentially, to do those things, we need some resources. So where do they come from? Well, they come from us. They've been there all along. We were simply tricked into ignoring them and lulled into a false sense of security that someone else was going to come along and do it for us. Well, if that's not going to happen, here's what we can do. A crowdsourcing campaign can raise an enormous amount of money in a very short period of time if it's actually created and presented in a fashion which causes people to want to engage. Last year, the crowdsourcing campaigns across the planet yielded $2.6 billion approximately. Okay, it's a relatively low number of people who even know about and participate in crowdsourcing, and yet it actually produced $2.6 billion of extra funding that wouldn't otherwise have existed, and the average donation was about $75 to it. This is all comes out of Hope's research into the crowdfunding systems that she carried out before she started actually doing her own crowdsourcing. So, we would like to start a crowdsourcing fund. The initial aim is $1 billion.
It'll be the biggest crowdsourcing fund ever.
Ever. Let's be clear about the numbers here. That's 10 million people donating $100. And we know that's doable. We know there are 20 million people who know about the OPPT. They might necessarily... That's in the alternative community. And the alternative community we define as those people who are actually paying attention to and following information from the alternative media as opposed to the mainstream media. They are following this information. The listeners of this program are a case in point. People that have been down the rabbit hole, finding out exactly what has been happening on this planet for such a long time. That is where the abundance is. It's actually in us. There's actually enough abundance just in the alternative community to kickstart this entire situation. And in fact, there's actually more than enough. If 20 million people know about the OPPT to the point where they have some understanding of what it was trying to do, then what we need is for half of those people to be moved to donate $75 to raise $1 billion. Let's correct that, $100 to raise $1 billion. that $1 billion is a down payment on the infinitely larger real abundance that exists when you amplify the number of people in the alternative community out to the number of people actually on the planet, which is 7 billion. 7 billion people. Okay? If they all gave a dollar, we'd have $7 billion. That's what the numbers does for us. So the objective with this crowdfunding campaign is to engage people's energy in a fashion that has the highest level of integrity possible and has a program mapped out to fast-track its use and to do it in a way that's completely transparent and trackable, managed by people with a very high level of integrity, readily recognizable because they're already doing great work on the alternative media. And we'll talk more about that a little bit down this conversation. I just want to, leaning over to make sure I've got enough time to explain it at this pace. I can do a faster version, but I want to actually give it a bit of detail because, yeah, thanks Hope, a phone is good. Give it a bit of detail because you guys will understand it and you will get it. So we have a crowdfunding campaign to raise $1 billion. So how do we actually get the message out? Now, the very first thing you need to understand about this is that the act of putting your energy in this campaign is actually an act of a reclamation of your sovereign free will. You're actually moving some of your energy out of the system and putting it completely in the hands of the people as an asset that will be used to ultimately kickstart, fast-track the freedom of the entire population. That's how important this is. We want to make that really clear that we are thinking big in this instance. There is no small thinking going on here. The energetic shift created by that alone will cause a shockwave through the system. All of those people physically taking their energy out, and it's the form of energy recognized by the system. It's currency. It's electric energy. It has current. So 100 million people, $100 donation, $1 billion. There's the down payment on our freedom. Here's what we'd like to do with it. The media, the alternate, I'd like to call them the new media because they are really not the alternate media anymore. There's so many people flocking across to it from the mainstream. They're really becoming the new media. It's simply us. This is the first instance of us building something outside governments. Okay, the alternative media exists outside governments. This is something that's actually a direct aspect of the people acting as one. So how do we actually leverage that to make this campaign go viral to the extent that it will just begin and never end and just grow continuously as people come across to understand what's actually going on? The first thing we have to do is to understand the communications network that we've got across the alternative media needs to be unified, needs to speak with one voice. Everything about this is acting as one. We've acted as one to build this alternate community. Okay? The system has inserted divisions in it. And it's inserted divisions at the level, the highest level of the communications aspect, which is amongst the various radio hosts and groups of radio hosts and radio stations, etc. There's quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing where and differences of perspective have become divisions. There has been some quite significant groups of people affected by division. And one of the things that I've come to realize is that the system acts to divide people whenever it finds they're acting as one. Okay, it's like at an energetic level, this system has monitoring facilities that constantly watch the population for signs that people begin to act as one and tries to counter it by creating division. It's happened to me personally. It's happened to virtually everybody that I know at some level.
Mm-hmm.
The attack on Andrew Bartz was a case in point. Okay, they did not want that information to go out to the collective and acted to stop it. across the alternative media, what's needed is that every person who is acting as a radio host or is running a radio network that has hosts or is blogging or is working on Facebook or Twitter, they need to support this campaign. They need to act with one voice. If they act with one voice, the people will react with one choice. And I just made that up on the spot. Sorry about that. And that is to actually act for the people. That is going to be our first task. And it's not even a case of I'm not suggesting that everybody has to suddenly switch to the same perspective. Okay? All we need to do is on this issue, supporting this particular crowdsourcing campaign, that they share the same perspective. I don't care if they have a different perspective on other subjects. If you don't accept that this is, you know, this particular bit of information about the ETs is correct, or that some piece of sovereignty legislation is better than another, that actually doesn't matter at all at this point. The only things that matters is that we take action that embodies unity consciousness, that's going to lead us to unity consciousness. And that means acting with one hand. Okay, we have to share that intention. We have to know that is going to bring us to a point where the collective will awaken. So first task is going to be to make this viral. We're going to be asking everybody whose voice is heard on the alternative media to speak out to support this. And that means, you know, everybody that actually is hearing my words on this radio station and who watches the live stream, particularly watch the live stream presentation of what Andrew did today, because he facilitated this particular description in a really, really effective way.
Oh wow, yeah.
It was really, you know what, and the interesting thing is he did it off the cuff. He only decided about 40 minutes before doing the presentation to do this instead of what he was going to do. Hope and I were ready to do what needed to be done, because we've been talking about this all weekend and having this conversation 3 or 4 times this weekend. So it just worked. It was really, really effective. And I'm sure you will enjoy it and appreciate what information that we're putting forth. So the first task is to get the message out. The first task is to put it to the mainstream. We will be the mainstream. Put it to the alternative media folk that this is the issue to unite on. Okay, set aside any differences of perspective you have on other things. Unite on this one, because this is the one that matters. This is the one that will create something that will make a difference. You know, there's been a fantastic amount of information contributed to the collective, but it's time to actually take action. The only way we'll ever co-create our way out of this matrix is to take action at 3D level. That 3D action will ultimately spin off into, if you want to use this terminology, that's fine, into a 5D version of this world, because once the collective starts to shift, it can't be stopped. We just need to light the fuse. So we have an opportunity to create a massive asset. Who's going to manage it? What's going to be the program? What will the folk get for their energy? Well, what we want to do is create a fast-track program, and the idea is to do it in short chunks. This is directly based on the ideas of Heather Tucci in having short-term contracts for the CVACs, the way she suggested CVACs be run, 3-monthly reviewed situations with specific objectives set so that the people know exactly what's going on. It's intended that all transactions be transparent, so they'll all be published on the internet, so it'll be known, you know, where the money's coming from and where the money's going to. $1 billion is a lot of money. My suggestion for an initial an initial group of people, call it a council, I don't really care what it's called, but I think it's constituents. There's some principles that need to be followed and some concepts that need to be put out there, because we don't have time to create a complex selection process or a complex management process. We have to get on with this. So our initial suggestion is that for a 3-month period that this fund is actually managed by five or seven, an odd number of folk of great integrity, you know, who have the confidence of the alternative community. My personal preference is that they're all women, and I won't put out any names just at the moment because we need to make sure that they're all in agreement, but my suggestion would be people of the caliber of Hope Girl. Okay? And you know, there were three presenters at this conference of sufficient caliber to engage the trust of the people who are going to put their energy in the hands of this group for a period of at least 3 months to effect change. So as the fund builds, and those people agree to come online, yeah, we'll put their names out there. But it's going to be managed in a very simple fashion. For the first 3 months, the objectives are going to be simple. Two types of free energy projects, two types of healing projects, and an enormous increase in resources for the alternative media, specifically focused on groups that have traction and have an audience who are heard and who need resources to expand their voice, to push outward. David Icke's group needs help. He's got a tremendous facility. It's been well executed technically. It's ready to rock and roll. He's coming online next month, but he'll run out of operational funds by the end of the year. Absolutely, fully supported by this funding effort. Fully supported. And folk in the alternative media who are currently working on money, you know, minimal amounts of money by donation, and whatever funds they tip into it, and massive amounts of energy and time from themselves and from other people who are involved. And, you know, great examples are 5D Media Network, Lisa Harrison, Bob Wright, and all her crew, whom I've worked with for many months, and I know absolutely put some more resources in their hands, and they will do even more great work than they're currently doing. In 5D Radio, you know, Greg does quite well on his on the way he runs his websites, etc. But he'd like to actually be able to spend more time on the radio to get more messages out. I'd like to pull in people from, and as Lisa has done, to run shows, radio shows daily, and again build up the message, turn up the volume. Many, many examples of people all over the internet who are doing an hour here, an hour there. If they are able to go, you know, fully full time or half time, or pull in help, that's where the resources will go, and it's not that much money, and it's going to be extremely well spent. Extremely well spent. So we turn up the volume to put the message out to the mainstream, and we turn it up hard. You know, for instance, the Absolute Data Exchange crew, I would actually, if they submitted a proposal that they could have one or two full-time people working on putting out methodologies for using all the information they've gathered, that would be a brilliant way of actually giving people a resource to access names and addresses of government departments and media organisations, courts across the planet, who need to be told that the people are actually going to build something new. Resource that, and you, all of a sudden you've got something that anyone on the planet can do to use their own to mount their own personal campaign to inform the system of whatever it is they think this system needs to be informed of. And that's just some of the things that could be done. Other things that could be funded are things like Teal's Vibrational Art Campaign, direct support for areas of the world that need support at the moment. And don't forget, folks, no government's involved. Not one. Those would be the kinds of projects embodied in the first few months. Keeping my eye on the time here. The free energy projects are actually already engaged. The Opal tour that Lisa Harrison and her crew are going to do is going to be literally taking a free energy generator, at least, on the road to demonstrate to people and to hand out plans. Free energy project that the Fix the World program have running is an electrical generator. So there's two projects straight up, and we know many, many people who are currently in secret holding technologies. Whichever project is the best one to deliver to the public, so it can be placed in front of them and say, here's what's been hidden from you for a long time. This will run your house. This will cost you, say, $2,000, $5,000, but you will never, ever pay a bill or buy fuel for your car again, pay an electric bill. That's the sort of information we can take to the mainstream that will wake the collective up. The healing projects, I personally would like to see a scalar device, a scalar healing device, one of the more sophisticated ones, put on the market and demonstrated, and something like a structured water cure for diseases put on the market and demonstrated. That would be just the project side of what would be the objective for the first, say, 3 months of this exercise. The other really exciting things are this. We've been exposed in the last month to a sovereignty process by Jagamara, the original shaman and lawful activist. What we want to do is launch that as a process that can be adopted by anybody. Is it ready to launch? It's not far off it. We need to understand it a bit more, and one of the reasons for Scott's visit to Jagamara is to start putting together a process and the explanatory material for the process, which would enable it to be released in a widespread fashion. The other aspect that we want to actually put forward for development is what we're calling consensus decision software. The system we live under at the moment, democracy, is a joke. The concept of having 51% of the population agree to something and the other 49% simply suffer in disagreement is ridiculous, and that system needs to be replaced by one which has the consensus, has the ability to actually draw people to a consensus, 90% plus. Something the system could never do because it can't manipulate a population to the degree if it ever needed to reverse a decision. It's a key piece of technology. What it means, and the way we are thinking of implementing it, is that anyone who actually donates money to this crowdsourcing campaign will have the right to participate in determining exactly where it's spent, where it is spent, especially beyond the first 3 months, because that's the point at which governance by the people would kick in after that first period. Now, I'm only suggesting 3 months at the moment as an arbitrary figure. Might end up being longer, might end up being shorter. We just need to put a number out there for you to actually think about. The idea behind having the people involved in it is it leads to a familiarity with the process of coming to a consensus, which is a different way of doing things. And a consensus is arrived at by shaping the proposition put to the people. It's not a case of a government telling it, you know, giving the people, okay, we've looked at this, our public servants have looked at this, and we've decided this is the best option for the people. Well, really, what we get from the public service is that their recommendations are almost always ignored, that the politicians almost always do whatever it is that best benefits the people who are paying for their campaigns. Mm. That's the message we get from the public servants. And by the way, the public servants on this planet, they're ready to stand up and actually be public servants. Mm-hmm. That's what we're hearing from the back door as well. The problem is at the political level, at the management level. That's where the problem is. Now, I'd like to point out two things about what's going on here. The people are creating an energetic asset outside the governments that they can use to actually help wake up the balance of the population to what's going on this planet. The people are creating a means of, not only the fairest way possible, the most transparent and real way possible of determining what it is that they really want. I can't underscore how important that is. An asset like that, we may end up actually beginning a people's bank with it, chartering our own bank, possibly even going directly to some form of universal exchange. Have a look at that. I want to point something out. What are the key requirements for a new world? A system of self-governance and a universal exchange. What we've been talking about on this show for several months. And what we're looking at here, we're saying we can do this, and we can do this within a couple of months. What we're looking at is the basis of the new system, of the new thing that the people want to move to. You know, Heather called her version of it a CBAC, and the principles that we've been espousing on this show are based on the principles of the CBAC. The details may end up being different. It doesn't matter. The way that that system actually works is that a very large group of people, i.e. us, allow a small group of people to form in service of the large and service of the many. By agreement, in full transparency, with full responsibility and liability. Under those circumstances, the people will determine what it is that they, what resources they wish to be created for the people in terms of infrastructure or services, and will, by contractual arrangement, request that whoever's actually carrying out the role of service to the people create those resources. It's as simple as that. What we're looking at are the very seeds of that new system. What we're looking at is the people, outside any form of existing governance, building the new, right here, right next to the old. What do you think will happen then? The reaction we got today was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
People really got it, that the abundance is right here, right in front of us. It's just not in the right form at the moment. We're not thinking about it the right way, and we're hoping the idea we're putting forward will simply, if it has the sort of acceptance that it's had so far, it will simply go viral. It will acquire a life entirely of its own. And one of the things that will happen, and I said this afternoon in the presentation, is that it will bring to the table the brilliant people who at the moment are inside the system at a management level and at a technical level. It will bring them out of the woodwork and bring their energy to this new situation here. When they realize what's going on and the potential that it has to change this planet, they'll be arriving on the doorstep and they'll be ready to go. I absolutely agree, and of course I can hear your thoughts now that, you know, well, what about the precise management of this? It's a lot of money. To fast track this, the best recommendation we can come up with, and the proposition we'll be putting out, is that for a period that it be managed by a group of trusted individuals. I think we need to accept that to fast track this, we have to keep it as simple as possible. There'll reach a point, however, when that consensus software is ready to go, we'll immediately be able to actually ask the people, you know, what they want, what they want to do with it next. Do we make a bank out of this? Do we simply keep using it for projects to wake the rest of the planet up and then enjoin everybody in this discussion? Do we create a universal exchange? You know, still waking up the rest of the population. We can do whatever we want. Now, Scott, we've got a few minutes left. I've been doing a lot of talking. Is there anything you wanted to add? Oh, by the way, alongside this, Scott, is running the sovereignty process we've been talking about, which will allow communities to form in a lawful manner at ground level.
Yes, yes, exactly. I thought one of the perfect examples of the use of that consensus software is, say, for example, you put out there this aspect of vehicle registration at the moment. What if it was proposed to establish a database for car ownership Because really all you want this database to do is to say, okay, that car belongs to that person, so that, say, emergency services can use that database. And there's really not a whole lot more that you want it for. Currently it's used for extortion. If you don't pay this, then they cancel that license and all of those subsequent things. You get an annual fee to pay for your same database that doesn't change. And the possibility to set up a parallel database and run one in competition to the current criminals.
Exactly. There's so many ideas that will come out of the woodwork, Scott. It's a matter of simply lighting this fuse, and we're going to need everybody's help to get the message out to support this. Light this fuse and just keep it going. That's
definitely.
This is the people taking action at ground level in 3D, taking the 3D form of energy, which is money, that they have access to, and putting it in a situation where for the greater good, we are all helping one another to move to the next phase. Now, we're going to run out of the stream in about 45 seconds. Hope Girl, thank you so much for all your support over these past months. We do have a lot of work to do, and I know you'll be right there for us, but it's been fantastic. Scott, same to you. And any last quick comments from Hope?
I just want to say that I think that we can do this. I think the time is now, and it's time that the people buy back their freedom.
Yes. Scott?
I agree. Yes, it's step up and be counted.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll be talking about this in the shows over the coming days, the community show and the long conversation, and very shortly we'll be embarking on the initial phases of building the new. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you found it as inspiring as we're finding it, and we'll be looking to get your feedback in coming shows. Have a great day. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.